Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tarr, normally my co-host, today he's also my guest, and he's your friend too when it comes to building FM transmitter sites. Chris Tarr is going to take us through a lot of the different scenarios he's been through in building new sites, improving old ones, getting onto new and old towers. It's pretty interesting what Chris has to say, and it's all coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry, at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb there at the top of the tower. Hey, I'm Kirk Harnack here in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a beautiful, gorgeous day in Nashville. Maybe we're done with the nasty weather. Oh, no, we're going to have a tornado warning probably tomorrow. Well, we'll see what happens. But anyway, the weather's getting warmer and feeling better, and it's good to go outside. So I'm happy. I've had enough of the completely cloudy, sunless days. How about you? In fact, we're up to almost 70 degrees here in Nashville. For the weather in Muckwonago, let's check in with Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, good afternoon.
You know, this is the time of year where Mother Nature starts going crazy. Yeah, you know, it's 50 today, but this past weekend I got 7 inches of snow, which is all gone again. So, you know, we're kind of used to that around here in spring. That's typical. But, you know, wow. We'll have a day where it's 20 and a day where it's 50, and a couple of more weeks and things will even out and it'll get nice. We'll have a nice spring. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to spring here, and I'm looking forward to spring in Las Vegas. We'll see what that's going to be like. I really haven't started tracking the weather yet. We're still more than 2 weeks away. So that, you know, any weather prognostications that far out are pretty well just, you know, voodoo land, good guesses, but we'll see. I can stand some desert air. I think that would be,
I was going to say, I have a prediction. It's going to be dry and in the 90s every day. That's my prediction.
It might be, although there have been some NABs where it was rainy, one where it was like a washout for a couple of days, and one NAB where it was, the wind was blowing unbelievably. I mean, you know, men were holding their skirts down. It was so windy.
I believe it. You won't get that this year.
All the Elvis impersonators' wigs blew off. It was that bad. I'm ready for the show because I've got my insulated Bucky's mug, and you know, here in I got this one in North Georgia. They have one north of Atlanta on I-75. I've been to a couple here and there, mostly, you know, way along I-10, like in Louisiana or Alabama, sure, or somewhere, you know, way down there. And then here in Tennessee, I understand we've got two. One is on the way to Knoxville from here, so it's on I-40, and the other one is on the other side of Knoxville from me. It's in it's right at the Sevierville exit, which is where Gatlinburg is. I don't know if that's open yet or not, but anyway, we got some here in Tennessee. Chris, you're excited though.
I am. Well, you know, I went to my first Buc-ee's in Texas, in Fort Worth, and all the Buc-ee's up until now have been, you know, south. They're opening one here in Wisconsin on I-90 in Madison. Now, it makes a little sense. I mean, I-90 is a very highly, it's actually two, I-90 and I-94, very heavily traveled interstate going to Minneapolis and North and South Dakota. And, you know, all points, I-90 goes all the way out to Oregon. So I was so amped up when I heard about this. I'm like, oh yeah, gotta give me some beaver nuggets. Woo! So now all we got to get is a Waffle House and we'll be all set.
I can't believe you don't have Waffle. Yeah, I saw a map of Waffle Houses, and Tennessee doesn't have as many as like 134 or something like that. Georgia's got the most. Oh my goodness, Georgia's got tons of Waffle Houses. But Buc-ee's, you can go in there and buy yourself an $11 brisket sandwich these days. They've really, yeah, they've gone up. But I'm not going to say they're worth it, but they're worth it. There's a lot of brisket on that sandwich.
There you go. I'm in.
134 fuel pumps, the ones that I've been to. I mean,
good gravy. Well, in the world's cleanest bathrooms.
Oh my goodness. Say. Yes. Yes. The bathrooms are amazing. You know, even if you need to kind of sit down and be private for a little while, they're really good bathrooms. Oh, well, hey, we'll talk about every engineer needs a good Buc-ee's. You know what Fry's Electronics was to, you know, to engineers and people like me who love to go and look at all the consumerish electronics and some professional too. Buc-ee's is for the everyday consumer. I'm sure we got lots of Buc-ee's stories. If we were taking phone calls on the show, I'm sure we'd get a bunch of them. most everybody I know loves Buc-ee's. I know a few people who avoid it. They don't care for it. It's not their cup of tea, and that's fine. But, man, you can go in there and spend money you didn't know you had.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, speaking of spending money you didn't know you had, we're talking about building transmitter sites. And Chris Tarr has done a lot of that in the last few years, even some recently. And so on this show, we're going to take you through a lot of the concerns about building transmitter sites. One of the best ways to do that is just look at the trials, decisions, tribulations, difficulties, and successes that another engineer has been through. And Chris has been through a lot of those. And if you're tasked with maybe building a new site, rebuilding a site, which is, you know, not uncommon these days, improving a site, maybe you're moving in, you're going to be diplexing, you're going to be on the same tower with somebody else. And you need to know, you know, what are some of the best practices? What are some challenges you might expect and how do you overcome them? What has been tried that didn't work out so well that maybe Chris has either found a good way to do it or next time we'll find a good way to do it? That's what we're talking about today. And I've got a little bit to add myself, if we have time for it, on the topic of STLs and just building up a whole new radio station. I think it's a pretty interesting question. I think we've answered it, but I want to get Chris's ideas on solving or on coming to a decision as to how to get a multiplicity of signals to an FM plus HD a transmitter site. So all that's coming up. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by Nautel, and they had a webinar today. They're going to have another webinar next Thursday. It's a noon Eastern time, 11 a.m. Central time. And the webinar that is coming up is about, it's what's an HD radio announcement. I have no idea what it is, but if Nautel sets aside a whole webinar for an HD radio announcement, you can be pretty sure they're not going to waste your time. So today they had this webinar about the VX series of FM rack mount transmitters. Next Thursday, you need to go register for this thing, the HD radio announcement. Now, whatever they're announcing, I'm sure they'll be showing at NAB, but maybe you can't go to NAB. So we got a link in the show notes. We'll put that in. You have a few days to register for it. Or if you just go to the website, nautel.com/webinars, and then you'll see the upcoming webinars. You can register for this one, the HD radio announcement. One button to register, and you get a page like the one on your screen right there. Easy peasy to fill out. They don't bother you. They don't spam you. They will remind you that the webinar is coming up a day before and an hour before. They will remind you. At least that's what it's been for me. So there you go. That's what's coming up. By the way, in upcoming Tuesdays as well, they have on Transmission Talk Tuesday. Those are coming up this coming Tuesday, April 4th. They have a Transmission Talk Tuesday with an NAB preview. And then also on Tuesday, April 18th, they'll have live from the NAB. So all that's coming up from Nautel. Thanks, Nautel, for helping out the industry, providing us lots of informational, helpful services, and just being there for us. All right. Chris Tarr is here. Chris, you're going to lead us through some of the things you've learned over the years in building transmitter sites.
Sure.
I may have a question or two or say, Chris, why would you do that? And you'll say, well, I don't know. It's my thing to do at the time.
Well, hopefully, you know, some of the pictures I have are more just topic starters, you know, rather than good, bad, or otherwise. Okay. You know, with the new job, well, it's not new anymore, 3 years in now. You know, we have a lot of sites that were very well cared for, actually. But they were basic. They were Spartan. And, you know, we had to do some upgrades there. They were very clean. And, you know, everybody did a real good job of maintenance. But then, you know, you do upgrades with new transmitters and you change things out. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you really have to pay attention to because it's a lot of the details that'll come back and bite you. So if you want to start looking through the pictures here, I'll just kind of narrate as we go along. I can, you know, doesn't matter where you start at the start. I don't know how that's got in there.
That's not a transmitter site.
That is my daughter at her middle school graduation.
Well, at least there we got that picture out of the way. So sometimes photo albums have stuff you weren't planning on.
So. No, I think I had it highlighted when I was selecting the other ones. Anyway, this I actually just found not too long ago. And this goes with a topic I think I actually brought up not too long ago, which is having a temperature gun, either, you know, the thermometer or the kind of the FLIR type gun to take a look at things. One of the rules I have at all the sites is to check the temperature of transmission lines before you leave. You know, even just rubbing your hand against it is important, because when this building was constructed, one of the issues that they didn't, or one of the things they didn't do, was provide adequate support for the transmission line. So basically, that connector was kind of just supporting itself with that bird line section that you see up ahead of it. And over time, that just caused the bullet and the inner to get weak and to get fatigued, and as you can see there, burned right up. Now, as you see on the other side of that, kind of in the background, you know, we fixed that. We just brought, we dropped down a metal hanger and wrapped it around the line and hung it up. But, you know, that's a pretty common thing, because line is rigid. So we all just kind of, it's a short run from the wall to that connector. It'll support itself. And, you know, they do, but as the temperature changes with the RF, you know, the metal can kind of change in size as well, you know, cooling and heating, and it gets fatigued. So, you know, that's one thing when you build is always think about cable management, or when you take over a new site, you know, take a look and how is the cable suspended? Is it, you know, is it done well? Is it every, you know, 10 feet or so? Is there anything that's being supported by its own weight or by the connectors? You know, you want to fix that when you see that.
Okay.
Wow. Next. Yep. This we'll talk about later on too with your STLs. This is one of the dishes that I'm using for an IP STL. And this is where, again, you can get creative. This was a site I had to build out for a translator. And I happened on, you know, when I'm looking at siting a translator, I usually bring up the Cavell Google Earth overlay. It's a great thing. If you haven't gone to that, FCC data is what is FCCdata.com, I believe. And they have a plugin for Google Earth and you can see towers. So what I do is I look for towers in the area that I want to build and, you know, kind of drill it down. Well, you know, oftentimes you can find independently owned towers. And what's great about that is usually you can get really good deals and you can find some great landlords. This is one of those where this was a former Nextel site. And, you know, there's like us and one other tenant on this tower. So they were really, you know, anxious to work some deals out with us. But this is a sidearm that was left from the Nextel days. And it made a great mount for the dish. And that's where you kind of got to think outside of the box when you're building these things out. Because I would have just, you know, just as easily leg mounted it, but I saw that and I was like, boy, that's a great place to put one of those dishes and, you know, get it out away from the tower and you know, from all that noise and everything. And it worked out really, really well. So,
I got a question about mounting little dishes like that, or even bigger dishes like that. You know, oftentimes I've been involved with sites where, honestly, it's my fault. I hadn't thought in advance about it. I hadn't thought enough about it or gotten my business partner to buy the right sidearm or any kind of mount. And too often I've just mounted dishes to the tower leg. And it's sure. been adequate. It's been okay. But when you mount it off the tower a bit, especially if a sidearm is really built to be stable, maybe more stable than the dish would be on the tower leg itself, depending on size. The sidearm makes it easier for tower climbers to get by there. You know, there's always a chance a tower climber could put his foot into your dish or onto your sure. feehorn. So it seems to me like best practice really is do what you can to get a sidearm out there.
Right. And again, it goes to, as you're building these sites, you know, do some investigating, do some work ahead of time and see what's there. And so, you know, I was able to go back to the landlord and say, hey, you know, you've got this sidearm, you know, do you mind if we reuse that? And in fact, Not only were we able to reuse that, we were able to reuse coax that was existing on the tower for an existing antenna that was abandoned. Mm-hmm. And so I actually had bought a roll of coax for this project. I was able to set that aside and use it for something else. I swept the line. It checked out good. You know, same thing. I was like, hey, do you mind if we reuse this line? They're like, no, great. You know, we're going to have to take it down. So that worked out very well, too. If I go to the next picture, I think that's the same site, if I remember correctly. Nope, that's a different site. This is another translator site that I just built. This is in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And this just shows, again, where you can fit a whole lot in a small package. And it's usually financially beneficial because these tower companies charge using, you know, floor space. So the more you can fit in a smaller package, the better off you're going to be. And these are, you know, two translators with a combiner into a single antenna on the tower. And again, you know, you almost have to go with a combiner because the floor space is cheaper than the vertical real estate. So you're pricing these things out, you don't want to have two separate antennas on the tower if you don't have to, because that real estate is a lot more expensive than that couple of square feet that I added on for the combiner. So, go ahead.
That's a really, really smart thing you just said. Sometimes floor space, even though it may cost money, it's cheaper than the vertical real estate on the tower. So if you can combine two or even three stations into an FM antenna designed for that, that's a great way to put that. You know, back when I worked at Scott Studios, in the mid 90s, compression technology was cheaper than hard drive space. Now, sometime maybe around the year 2000, that reversed and hard drive space became cheaper than audio compression technology. And even though both are fairly cheap right now, we know it's better to store files linearly, even if it takes up a lot of space. But what a great thought. Combine them to reduce your expense on the tower. Yeah.
Right. And we were able to get, and not only that, but, you know, neither one had to take second place, you know, above or below. So we were able to get one antenna at a excellent spot, you know, like 600 feet or something, and put mm-hmm. the two of them together. And, you know, we could have done more if we had more at that site, but we just have the two that are there. But that's, again, a very nice, compact little setup that, you know, will be trouble-free for a long, long time. And, you know, was, again, a great value because, you know, the floor space was so cheap. So we'll go on to the next one, see what we got. This is like a box of chocolates. It's great. I don't know what I'm going to get.
Never know what you're going to get. Oh, look at this.
So this is interesting. This was the stations in Milwaukee in my previous job. And here's a great example of a site that was retrofitted and we had to de-retrofit because the times and the use of the building has changed. This was originally wide open, and that's where the transmitters had always lived since the building was built in the early 50s. But at one point, that was an office in that center area there, and the transmitters wrapped around, and they had their studios. So to cut down on noise and other things, they put up these walls with the windows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that made that lobby area fairly quiet and some other things. The downside was, as we added more gear to that area, the airflow was just not very good. We pumped air conditioning in there, but it's such an enclosed area that the hot air, warm air from all the gear really had nowhere to go. It was getting trapped in that small area. And, you know, this is just a transmitter room and storage space now. So there's nobody there. So, you know, originally, you know, the company was talking about putting in more air conditioning and more air handling. And I sat there with the picture there of my former assistant, Matt. We just went, why don't we tear down the walls? They don't need to be there. And then all the air, you know, we have this entire huge room with cool air that, you know, we can combine and share and, you know, let the cool air from there get in and the warm air from there get out. So that's what we did. We tore it out. And I know one of these pictures I believe has is a picture of the walls coming down. Okay. So if we want to go to the next picture, there it is. Yeah. So you can see, you know, the walls were just, you know, they were after the fact. I mean, this is a 1950s design, Art Deco design. And so the walls are an afterthought. I think they went up in the 70s. So now, and this is a wraparound. So there's transmitters on, you know, going around that picture. There we go. There's the other one.
Oh, wow.
So you can see now with all of the walls out, now all of a sudden, you know, there's a whole lot of airspace there, you know, so air can circulate very freely in that area. And we went from having, you know, our gear get, you know, overheated on a regular basis to everything in that building being cool. Even the temperature of the building would rise because air would get trapped in these spaces. You know, we had a lot of cooling, but, you know, the air in that lobby area where Matt is standing, that's empty. So that would always be cool. And then the half of the building behind the walls would always be warm. So we're able to regulate the temperature. But that's another example of, you know, when you move into a space or you upgrade a space, what do you do with that? You know, is that space old enough now where you need to maybe revisit, you know, the heat loading or the design, you know, even safety factors and, you know, things like, you know, was there any asbestos there? And there actually was in the flooring in that building. So, you know, those are all good things to look at, you know, building design and things of that nature. And again, sometimes the solution is inexpensive. I mean, you know, we could have thrown a lot of money at cooling in that building when in reality, you know, spending 2 days of labor just tearing out the walls fixed the problem.
You know, wow, this is such a classic site where you had a lot going on. You've got a directional AM there, don't you?
Directional AM and also an FM with HD and also a hop-off site for another FM. So there's a lot going on in those racks.
Wow. Wow. In the previous picture, you had that no parking sign. Pretty important, too. You don't want anybody parking.
Yeah, that's right. There. Well, you know, you don't want anybody sitting in your engineering spot there right in front of the building. That's for, it's good to be the king.
And this being a big market station, I can see that you had in place all of the Nielsen encoding, formerly Arbitron encoding, and looks like some enhancing for that. So a lot going on in that room, huh?
Yeah, and I think eventually I split some of that stuff up when I went to SNMP to do resets of those that gear. I believe I moved it into our server rooms after that. But yeah, we had a lot of stuff going on in that building. And those racks, after we tore out the walls, we also went through the racks and did some reconfiguration there.
One thing that I just learned or am reminded about the pictures you just showed there is to ask the question, does this setup still make sense? You know, it was done, mm-hmm. you know, some way for a reason, may have been the best solution at the time, but it's always worthwhile to ask, does this still make sense? Is there a way to improve this in light of the changes that we've made, whatever they may be?
And those are questions too, that, you know, that you have to remember to ask. Like, I had no idea why there were walls there. For all I knew, they'd been there forever. And I asked former employees, I said, what's the deal with the walls? You know, it seems like they were put in after the fact. They said, yeah, you know, we had offices in there and everything. And we put the walls up to keep it quiet. And, you know, they didn't used to be there. So, okay, well, there you go. There's your answer. And that would also been a situation. Oh, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, as I recall, the building you just showed us is a separate building. There's a newer building where all the studios and offices are now next to that, right?
Right, right. And at the time, there wasn't. And again, I mean, that's, you know, but that also goes to the people who did the remodeling. You know, they didn't really think about heating and cooling and that sort of thing when they put up the wall and created these islands. You know, that was probably not the best way to go with that, but it could have been all they had at the time. So, all right, let's move on to the next one.
Well, we're going to take this opportunity to take a quick break. Chris Tarr is not only the co-host, but today he's also the guest. And that happens every now and then because Chris's experience is wide ranging and he has such a holistic view of how radio transmission and studio sites work. And the technologies behind all that. And I think he's a great teacher. Well, he's part of the mentor program in the SBE, so you know he's a great teacher. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcast Bionics and the Bionic Studio. We're going to hear about that. You pay attention. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Good stuff from Broadcast Bionics. And man, I tell you, that combined with all the other new technologies that are out here, you can have yourself some amazing content creation enabled in part by Broadcast Bionics. Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And Broadcast Bionics founder Dan McQuillan is going to be our guest on some upcoming show. He's been touring through Australia, and I think he's back now, and we'll see him at NAB. But we're going to get him on the show to talk about some truly amazing technology, as Dan always does. So thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics. Chris Tarr is our co-host and guest, and also a spokesperson for an ad later on the day. He's very busy. I can't imagine the size of the check I'm going to have to write to Chris for this show.
Get writing.
truth be told, it's going to be looking a lot like the other checks he gets.
I didn't put this in a picture. I had actually shown a picture on the show a while back, but the last picture made me think about this. Another good piece of advice is learn zoning and siting regulations in your state. We had a situation where I had a transitor building that was literally falling into a swamp, and the building had cracked in half on its foundation. It was, one side was tilted, it was slowly sliding. So we got to the point where, you know, we're going to have to replace the building, and it's right next to a wetland, and, you know, because it's an AM. So there could have been a lot of hoops that we would have had to jump through. But I knew that in our state, if we reused the existing foundation and didn't do any digging or anything like that, it was basically replacing the structure. So what I came up with was, you know, one half of the foundation was on solid land. So what I came up with was, we just nowadays, again, the equipment has gotten so small, I didn't need a huge transitor building. I just needed like a small wood, kind of just small, almost shed type of thing. So I divided up, you know, we took out the concrete that was falling, divided the remaining concrete in half. And on the one little corner, quarter of that, we built a new shed. I took the plans to the city planner, and that was the smoothest thing I had ever done because I knew what the rules were. And I said, so if we do all of this, we're actually getting some stuff out of the wetlands, and I'm rebuilding on an existing foundation, everything else. He's like, have a good day. Have fun. So it's always good to know those rules, because that could have been a huge hassle being right next to a wetland and doing any kind of excavating or anything else. So, you know, I just knew that if we left some part of the existing foundation, we'd have no problems at all. So that's what we ended up doing.
Chris, this is not the show to talk about it, because I'm not an expert. I don't, maybe you not aren't either, but now there's some kind of rules about siting RF generation near or within eye shot of Indian burial grounds. Have you heard about that?
There is some of that. That's a tower related thing. And of course, whenever you build a new tower, it goes through all of those permits and through all the Indian tribes and everything else as part of the plan to get an approval for a new tower. So yeah, they're always changing. So you really need to keep up on that and keep those relationships good. Because you know, if the time comes and you need to make some negotiations, it's better if they like you.
You know, in American Samoa, when you're trying to site a tower, there will be cases of Wahoo involved and maybe a Cadillac Escalade or two.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not asking for enough, apparently.
Not if you're a landowner or next to a landowner.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The magic word, the magic phrase is that land has been in my family for generations.
I see. That gets you to open the checkbook up. All right. So let's go to the next one. It's an interesting tower. This is one we actually just bought and are now selling.
Okay.
We bought it and we got an offer, to buy it from somebody else who was interested. So we ended up, I'm going to do the repairs on it and resell it. But this is a good example of, when you're looking at towers and structures and things like that, get a bigger picture of what's on there, because I ended up having to put a dish on here. And if you notice, that's not a very tall tower. So I really had to figure out where I was going to put an IP dish for our STL. Mm. And it ended up having to go into those backup bays, which generally works okay, except when we use the backup bays. Then all of a sudden we lose the IP link, and we ended up having to do that because that antenna on top burned out. And so it doesn't work right now. So I'm having to replace it. But, it's also a good indication of this tower was hand built by the guy who built the radio station. It's always good to know what's there. If you notice, there's a tower in the middle of the tower. There's like a little Rhone 25 tower.
Wondering about that. What is that?
When he built the tower, he put that in the middle to make it easier to climb. Cause he at the time did all of his tower climbing his own.
Oh my gosh. By the way, is this tower tapered for a ways and then straight? It looks like it would be self-supporting to a low height, and then there's more on it that gets guide.
No, the guying is not really necessary. That was kind of an afterthought. In order for ERI to warranty the antenna, they required the guy wires, just because it tapers at the top, and that's just to prevent it from bending, or they don't really they don't really do much. But there's a good example of finding out the history behind it before you make assumptions on what it is and isn't. So,
this topic of these entrepreneurial souls who got a license and like built their own towers, maybe from a kit. I don't know. There's a gentleman that I want to have Chris on the show sometime. I got to go get him. Problem is, he lives in a place where the internet is terrible. And I've visited him in person. I used to work for him. His name is Hannes Shane. And Mr. Shane, what a renaissance man. He wrote an outdoor play and owned the outdoor play theater for years. COVID actually shut it down. Even performed in the plays. People would come from states around to go to this outdoor theater. And he built several radio stations. Actually, I worked at two of his radio stations in my young days. One of them was a three-tower directional, and he personally, by himself, put up all three towers for the three-tower directional. He hoisted himself up each tower, added more sections. This guy is incredible. He posts three or four times a week on Facebook about the transmission he just rebuilt. And the guy's got to be 75 years old.
I'll tell you what, that tower is never going to go anywhere. It is really? So. Oh yeah, it is built so unbelievably. It like bottom half of the tower is sunken like 10 feet of concrete. I mean, it's crazy. How he built that, because he put the station on. He was the first owner, signed it on in the 60s, and found a used tower and sunk it in a bunch of concrete. And it's unbelievable, just crazy.
We can do it by the specs, or we can do it by that ain't going nowhere.
Right. And that's what he did. He did the, that ain't going nowhere. In fact, because I just actually just had it inspected and certified by a PE just to say that it was safe. And, yeah. You know, and the PE was the same way. He's like, yeah, that thing's not going anywhere. So,
okay.
Anyway, so let's go to the next picture. See what we got here. Okay. This one is another great example of a co-location. This sure. is a cell site that I just put a three bay antenna on. This one was a little difficult because, as you know, the cell towers taper and you want to have the bays on straight. So we had to develop a sidearm there, but nothing spectacular about that other than this was a great example of troubleshooting. From the day I turned this thing on, it had issues and with reflected power jumping up and down and, I replaced the line, I replaced the connectors, I replaced the power divider. It was one of the bays. And it just never occurred to me because you buy a brand new antenna and, you just go, oh, it can't be the bays. But it was a good lesson in test everything. I didn't mm-hmm. test the bays because I'm like, there's no way, that the bays are bad. It's a brand new antenna. Well, it was. And that was the problem. And replaced the antenna and everything was great. It's a great site.
I love this picture. You guys got pretty clouds up there in Wisconsin.
We have them. That's for sure.
if those clouds weren't there, that antenna would be a lot harder to see in any photograph right. from the ground because your sky is so dark exactly. blue. But by the way, this is a great colo use. I don't see too many FMs on cell towers. Maybe people think that it's hard to negotiate that, but here you are and it's a perfect use.
And really, it's not that hard because that's all unused space. So that's all found money for the tower company. Because generally, once the cell rack is up there, that's it. So I've got two or three sites that are on cell towers. And, they're pretty, the only issue is that usually they're shorter. So, but I've got several of them. In fact, I've got a full power FM on one and they work just great.
We've got one in Mississippi that's going to go up in the next few months, and it's going on a cell tower. But the cell tower, it doesn't look like it to the naked eye, but it's actually 350 feet tall.
And yeah, so, this one's like 300. So,
yeah, surprising. Okay,
go ahead. All right, so next one. This is that same site. And again, this is where, again, with the right landlord and the right situation, things get done. So my box is that aluminum box or the steel box there with the door open. That concrete platform was there from a previous tenant. And, when I was talking to the company, the landlord of the site, they offered it up. They said, hey, you know what? We've got this platform that was left over. If you want it, you can have, you can use that platform and put your equipment right up there. So again, that was one of those where you get a good rapport with these guys. And, you look for strategic locations where, it's really beneficial to both of us. A lot of times you can get these kind of things, these kind of amenities thrown in. So that was just a nice little add-on when I got that site.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What do we got next? What's next? I'm trying to remember what this was. Oh, yes. This is, this is that same owner. Of the site that was that had the freestanding tower, you can see the amount of guy wires. This guy, it's like a 200-foot tower, and you can see the number of guy wires this guy put on there. But this is another example where we're putting the sidearm on for an IP radio, and we use the big 5 gigahertz radios on these, and I have the world's most stable link on that one. So that was all that was that showing the sidearm going on there for that we fabricated.
Yeah.
Next up, a great example of, and I think I brought this up as an example before of kind of value engineering. This is our studio site in La Crosse. And we needed to build a studio. Budgets, obviously, we're a small group. So, we spend money, but we try to be smart about it. This is all used equipment, and the countertop was existing from a previous tenant in that building. And it turns out the landlord is also a builder. So he managed to build up the countertop to my specifications to fit the rack underneath and be a stand-up system. It was actually a reception desk, and he was able to raise it up and build it to, you know, build it to our specs. And then, you know, I got a great deal on the phone system and the Axia gear and everything in the used market. And, you know, that's maybe $10,000 total for that studio right there. Oh, wow. It's on the high end. So again, great, you know, a great use of, you know, keeping an eye out for good deals. A lot of times we'll buy this equipment, even if I don't really have a use for it yet, just if I see something that's a really good deal, I'll buy it and put it in storage just for these projects. All right. So next up. Okay. This is a project actually I just finished this past week. This is a directional FM. It's a class A that we're moving from one part of the state to another. It was a mutually exclusive move, so it was pretty easy from Portage, Wisconsin to Stoughton. But it's highly directional. And this is a situation where, and the reason I brought this up, and I think I have one more picture, where, you know, you really have to get a construction crew that you trust. And something like this is exceptionally complicated. And I do have a picture of the antenna on the tower with all the parasitics and everything. But, you know, you have to trust that the tower crew knows what they're doing as they're putting these things together and putting them on the tower. Because if you do it wrong, you're going to have problems. So, you know, I have a couple of different crews that I work for or work with rather. And I have one crew that kind of does the easier stuff for me and they're a little less expensive. And then there's this crew, I call them the A team, that when I have projects like this, I completely trust and they come in and they get the job done. And I think when we come back, we'll get another picture. I think I may have one on the tower, but I know we got to take a break here, but you know, just get, whenever you're doing these projects, you know, find a tower company, take care of them. And, you know, these guys are really good to me. You know, we have a really good rapport and, you know, they do a lot of these projects for me and they do such good work. So that's really important when doing these jobs.
I'm going to keep everybody hanging on for that last picture of that directional. And I've never seen one like with double directors on.
Tight one.
it's a tight one. That's right. Yes. Hey, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech. We are learning about transmitter sites from Chris Tarr, who's certainly been involved with a lot of them, anywhere from, you know, starting from scratch to rebuilding old ones to taking over ones that have been there for years and improving them. Lots of things that Chris has been through and lots of things that he can teach us. And he is. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by Broadcast Tools and a product that Chris knows something about. We're going to take a look at it online here. It's the Audio Sentinel 4 Web, a web-based analog silence detector. Now, it doesn't detect silence on the web. Chris, I think it tells you about silence on the web. You want to tell me what this thing can do?
It does. Oh, they're great. Basically, you plug in your audio and it will monitor all of your channels. You can do either 4 stereo pairs, 8 mm-hmm. mono pairs, or anything in between. And it will email you on silence or out of phase conditions if you want. So you can see even there, they have got the indicators of in phase or out of phase. So it works really, really well. One of the things I love about it is if you notice there, it's got Studio Hub inputs on the back. So installing one of these suckers, if you have Studio Hub, it's a 5-minute installation. You know, also what I love is the VU meters. I mean, that's because so many times you put in some of these other silent sensors and they just have a little activity light and you don't know if you're like right on the edge so that when, you know, a quiet song starts, it's under the threshold and you get these phone calls and, you know, you can actually, you know, set this up and see what they're doing. I love them.
Now, when the VU meters, those are on the web interface, right?
Correct. They have activity lights on the front, but then you log in and when you're setting it up, it's also got software control for input levels and things like that. You can actually set it, look at the VU meters and make sure everything's working.
Okay. This is a great way to check things. You can check these from your home, right? You can see if you got audio on that station. Maybe the problem is farther down the line.
Yep. In fact, one of the things I use it for is I have a translator that I can't really pick up on my radio. And I use Interplex for all my back and forth audio. So I'm sending audio back over the Interplex from that site, feeding it right into that silent sensor.
Gotcha. Yeah. Is it your practice to typically use these in their stereo mode or you typically just monitor one side of something in the mono mode?
It just depends on how many I need to monitor. You know, if I've got, if I have enough, I'll do stereo. If I need more, I'll do mono. I don't really, to me, I can always put, because if you use the Axia X nodes, you can sum everything into one channel like that in mono, and then you're good to go.
You know, it's a good time to mention the fact that broadcast tools, they've been solving problems for years and years and years. Remember back when broadcast tools, one of the first things I ever used from them was a satellite channel switcher. Back when maybe our automation system only had one satellite input, or our audio console only had, you know, enough room for one audio input from the satellite, and we had to choose different channels from the satellite, or maybe the receiver itself. Satellite receiver just had one output instead of, like, oftentimes you got four now on many of them. Point is, by serial commands, you could typically tell the satellite receiver to change to different channels. So when you were changing programming from one show to another, a lot of times you have to change channels, and broadcast tools made stuff like that. Well, they continue that tradition, obviously, today. One thing that I'm looking at, and we're going to feature this on a future show, is the Universal 4.1 MLR. That's a web-based XLR switcher with silence and loss detector. And so same thing as Chris mentioned earlier, you can wire it one way, or it's got the Studio Hub connectors on it also, and it's web-based. So Broadcast Tools is really getting into web-based control and monitoring, so that you can do your job easily from elsewhere. And that's kind of where things stand these days. So Broadcast Tools, problem solved. That's their slogan, and it's very true. Their website is amazing, because you can go get manuals, download software, get support right there, read about the Broadcast Tools story and Don Wingett and how he has been the force designing all these products that broadcasters use. So check that out. Broadcast Tools. It's broadcasttools.com is that website. And of course, the place to get this stuff is from Broadcasters General Store, BGS. They're in Ocala, Florida, but it really doesn't matter where they are. They are well connected with web and telephone, and you can give them a call anytime. Well, anytime they're open. Okay. And place your order, get your best price. They have sharp pencils. They always say they have sharp pencils, and they've always been very, very good to me. The website, bgs.cc, or you can call them at 352-622-7700. I just made a trip to New York City along with some BGS folks. We had a great meeting at the SBE there and made a lot of station visits as well. And a huge podcasting studio at the New York Times. Oh, my goodness. Well, these people have seems like a couple dozen studios for podcasting. So, and they got, you know, BGS supplied gear all throughout. So thanks a lot to Broadcaster General Store for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is our guest, and Chris is going to continue on with pictures and stories and advice for transmitter sites. Yeah.
And Suncast, as we get to the last, towards the last picture, just let me know. This is sweeping that same antenna. And as you can see, 95.9 is the frequency, 1.01 to 1 on that directional antenna. And this is a bird site manager device that I use. That it's got a built-in watt meter. It does, you know, line loss, it does antenna sweeps. But, you know, that's another thing when you build these sites out. Excuse me, always sweep the line, always sweep the antenna before you hook anything up to it. And you have the crew there, because it's a whole lot easier to fix it when they're there than to have them come back and fix it later.
So this is a bird product. I have not used this.
It's very similar to the Anritsu, and I bought it refurbished and recalibrated from a company, and you know, it was a couple thousand dollars, but totally worth it. I mean, that it's worth its weight. You know, it saved me a lot of hassle. You know, functioning as a TDR and other things. So it's a great little device.
You also give good advice about doing this when the tower crew is there before they've left, because I've had tower crews leave, and then only then after would I discover that we got a lot of high reflected power. It turned out to be like a split bullet in the assembly of the antenna. Yep. And, you know, you hate to get in the finger pointing, but if they're right there anyway, and you can say, look, dudes, I know you just put it up, but look, here's the problem, and here's about where it is. We got to fix it now.
And no. That's where having that good relationship with your tower crew comes in, because they know they'll wait for me to do it. They'll ask, you know, they'll be like, Doc, you sweep the line yet? And, you know, I'll let them know the results. And so, you know, in fact, you know, we have such a good, you know, history together, is they'll sometimes compete to see how low they can actually get that number. you know, I had a guy from that, from a crew, replace a connector because he looked at it and went, I don't think that connector is good enough for you. And he put a new connector on. So that's where, you know, having that good relationship pays off. So,
all right,
let's go to the next one. This is a site I just built, and a great example of, well, you know, maybe I don't need it. This is a translator site. And I got a free rack. They had a rack sitting in there. I forgot rack screws, but I'm looking at this going, do I really even need a whole rack anymore? You know, with codecs and everything else, it's being fed by Fibert. I've got a little firewall on top of the box, but the processor and the codec are built into the transmitter. So it's literally that one box. And, you know, it's just plopped it on top of the rack for now until I get some rack screws. But you know, that's how small and clean these installations have gotten. There's an antenna, two network cables, and a power cord, and that's it. That's all that's in this site. But the one thing you'll notice is it's pretty well labeled, and I really believe in labeling things, because if somebody else takes over for you or is just even doing you a favor, you know, for them to walk in and see that that's your, because there's a couple of tenants in this site, that's your gear, those are the IP addresses, you know, or if somebody's visiting the site and needs to know how to contact you, there's my phone number and email address. So that's really, you know, that was the thing that I really wanted to show in this picture, is label everything.
I got to point out something about that rack. Now, I get surly when I have to mount a nice, beautiful power strip in a rack. And, you know, I'm talking three screws or some cable ties. Yeah. Somebody went to a great deal of trouble to put a couple of quad boxes in there with the right materials. And then that looked good.
Yeah. You know, but it's, you know, it's funny because, again, it's one of those same, I would love to have a nice shiny little, you know, nice little half rack or something like that. But hey, for free, I'm not gonna, you know, I'll take it. I mean, you know, anywhere I can save a couple of bucks. So anyway, next picture. They are kind of out of order. This is the same site, before the sidearm with the radio on it. That was the former Nextel site, and you can just see the three bay antenna up top. But again, you know, the advice I have for this one is, if you notice going up the tower, you know, the bracing changes on the antenna. And I kind of use that to my advantage when, you know, placing the antenna. Now, you can't legally create a reflector that creates a directional antenna. But when you run into this situation where you've got a little steel behind you, sometimes you can use that to your advantage. So there's that. Next one.
This is
the tower we were doing the work on before the antenna went up, and you actually kind of see them there climbing the, you know, they're kind of climbing below that four bay. But this is when it's done, this will have the four bay, which is the main FM there, the three bay, which is the translator. And then right below where the guy is, there's going to be another two bay. And then, that six bay with the one broken ring element is going away.
Wow. It is broken, isn't it? Goodness.
But it works. It is surprisingly, it loads just fine. It works just fine. It's an aux antenna, but we're gonna get that out of there. So all right, so I got two more photos here. So let's go to the next one. This is interesting. And again, this is where you gotta know, you know, you gotta do a little work. Because at first I looked at this, and you know, you can see there's a cross member issue there and a bent cross member. And I looked at this and went, oh, this is unsafe. You know, we gotta get this fixed. This is not. Well, it turns out that this was in when the antenna was getting constructed, that happened, and they had a PE on site, and that was how they resolved it. So it actually was printed and signed off on and stamped. So, you know, had I not gone back to look, I would have went, oh yeah, that's unacceptable. And in fact, I did it first until I did some more research on it. That's that.
That's interesting.
And then one more, that's the new antenna.
Oh, so yeah.
there you can see, you know, where all those reflectors are there, you know, and where having a competent crew to assemble that is so important, because if you see all of the parts involved, you know, and they have to go in the right order, and they have to go, you know, even, you know, measuring is critical in this situation, the spacing and the measurements between elements and everything else is precise. So you really need a crew that you can count on to do this. So, you know, when you're building a site, especially, I mean, it goes for whatever antenna you're putting up, but probably doubly important for directional antennas, get a crew that knows, that understands this. In fact, this particular crew has a device that they can bring up, a computerized device that they can bring up and do the azimuth on the tower with the antenna to point it in exactly the right orientation. It's not a matter of guessing with their phone or whatever. I mean, these guys know what they're doing. They'll go up there and they have this device and they can, you know, move the antenna to exactly the azimuth that it needs to be. So when I go to get this certified, there won't be any issues. So again, that's where, you know, choose your crew wisely. And, you know, it's really tempting to get Joe and his brother to come up and you know, climb the tower for you. And in some cases, you know, if you're just signing up something minor, sure, that's okay. But in a situation like this, you really do need a professional, experienced crew.
What do you have against Joe?
What? I like Joe. I have a couple of Joes that I use for tower light changes and things like that. But, you know, it's, you know, a project like this is going to be really expensive. And, you know, your first reaction is to cut costs and go, well, let's get, you know, see if we can save money on a tower crew or something like that. And, you know, I draw the line on a project like that. I go, you just can't cut a corner there.
Hey, if we could show that picture one more time, I want to look at something. The tower, there we go. Whoever owns that red vehicle down at the base of the tower has a lot of faith in that tower crew.
Well, if you notice the white vehicle to the right of that, that's mine. So
that's the tower crew's red vehicle, huh?
Yeah. Well, the tower crew's red vehicle, I'm the white one on the right side there. But yeah, it's like, you know, you got to wonder, you know, or actually, you know, on the other hand, maybe that's a good sign. You know, they're confident enough it's not going to fall in their truck. So, you know, I guess in wrapping up my conversation about these sites, you mentioned the word holistic earlier, and I think that's really important. You know, it's really easy to take a look at a site that you have and go, well, you know, that's the way it is, or, you know, kind of look at things as the way you've always done them. And as I mentioned going in, all of the sites that we have with the group I'm with now have been very well maintained, very clean and well done, but a lot of them are older and they're showing their age, and in some of these sites we're adding equipment. And then obviously we've grown exponentially with new sites. So, you know, always take a look at, you know, when the site was built, maybe there is another purpose in mind that you don't need anymore. Is there a way to, you know, make your equipment happier? A big thing of mine is whenever you're building a site or taking over a site, unplug the old gear. That drives me nuts. You know, I walk into a building and, you know, there's old mod monitors and, you know, tuners and, you know, all plugged in and working, but you're not using them. So, you know, save yourself a couple of dollars in an electrical bill.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was going to interrupt before we get into my we could either do my little thing for Angry Audio or we can talk about STLs.
Actually, let's look at my three pictures and sure. Just get your quick take on it, and then we'll break for the commercial break, and then we'll get our tip of the week after that, if that's all right. Work for you?
Perfect.
All right, Suncast, we got three. There we can we get scenario A up somehow? I don't know if you can, if that's to the left or right. There we go. Okay. So in Oxford, Mississippi, myself and some partners are putting up a new FM. Well, we're buying an existing FM station, and we're going to make a change format and put up a HD2 and an HD3 to go along with it. And we'll probably end up having a translator at some point fed off the HD2 or HD3. And we were thinking about, okay, do we put equipment at the studio as you traditionally would? And then the transmitter site becomes pretty simple. So if we put everything at the studio, you've got playout one automation, the server, the playout one for the FMH, the FM and the HD one, a separate playout one for the HD two, and a separate playout one for the HD three, another computer that's handling the HD stream processing, maybe the FM processing too, if we do software based FM processing and do our stream encoding. Another computer that would probably just handle ingest. We have found that that's kind of intensive and it maybe ought to be on its own computer. And then one of the devices will be a Nautel multicast importer exporter. That'll send E2X IP data to the transmitter site. And then we'll have another computer that'll be like an Axia Altus audio console running as a Docker container, and also a Docker container Telos VXS. So a phone system there. And then externally, we got to have a couple of nodes to handle a few external ins and outs, say GIS and relays, and a Justin 808 to keep the FM and the HD1 aligned. But everything can then go over the internet with no external codecs involved. And we do Omni MPX. We would do the micro MPX format. So that's one scenario. Most of the gear is at the studio. You could remote control the whole station from elsewhere, as in that picture that's shown there. That's actually a station in Oklahoma that's doing kind of the same thing we're doing. All right, let's go to scenario B. Scenario B. This one, the only difference here is my business partner said, well, do we really need the Justin 808? And I said, well, we can get rid of that, except we got to make sure the audio all arrives exactly at the same time, and it still may not be exactly right. You still may need it, but if we used if we put the Nautel multicast importer exporter at the transmitter site, then we use the same codecs to transmit everything. You know, buy a couple of Telos iPort HDs. Or you certainly could use other ones, Tilines or Comrex. And then we can, you know, maybe do away with the Justin. I kind of wanted to show Larry that, you kind of want to have the Justin. So that's scenario B. Most everything's still at the studio. We moved a few things to the transmitter site. Finally, scenario C, basically put everything at the transmitter site. Now, this is non-traditional, but I think we're going to go this way. Put the playouts all at the transmitter site. Put the importer export at the transmitter site. Put the audio console software at the transmitter site. Put the phone system at the transmitter site. Then at the studio or anywhere else that you have a browser, we would control the radio station. And using WebRTC built into this new product from Axia, I don't mean this to be a commercial. I'm just trying to describe, why this would work. You can remotely have, one contributor or several contributors and monitor what's going on, just like your console's there, except it's on a web browser. And everything goes at the transmitter site. One thing that kind of turned my partner into liking this is he only has to buy one backup generator that would go at the transmitter site. He wouldn't have to buy one at the studio and one for the transmitter site. This also prompts him to buy a better prefab building for the transmitter site, not just a shack, but a real, a decent, good prefab building to hold all the computers. Why don't we get Chris to think about this over the commercial break and see what he would do? And I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm happy with any of those scenarios. But I'm intrigued by the non-traditional scenario because people doing there's big Portland radio group that did for a short time that last scenario because they were homeless for a while. So anyway, all right.
Okay.
That's that. Our show this week in Radio Tech, we'll be right back with Chris's answer, is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. And Chris Tarr is going to tell us about Angry Audio, aren't you, Chris?
I am. I'm going to tell you all about Angry Audio and their processing line, which, Catfish was talking the other day, Mike Dosh, who owns the company, that they're not looking. Somebody brought up, why don't you get into full blown processors? And that's not really what they're about. There, as he put it, there are other great companies that make great processors. He, looks at this other niche of these smaller processors that are more like utility processors. So he came up with the Chameleon line, and there's different chameleons for different jobs. He's got the headphone chameleon, which is the C3, and that basically processes audio for talent headphones. So, for example, if you're running HD radio and you're having to run that delay, you're having your talent has to listen to their audio over the program bus. Well, that's unprocessed audio, and that can be a little unjarring for somebody who's on the air. So the Chameleon C3 processes that audio to give them nice, full, rich, processed audio in their headphones from their microphone. So that's a great box for that. The C4 is a live stream processor, and actually we've heard that some live venues like churches are using these now too, and some people for, you know, video streams and that sort of thing. And basically it gives you a nice, consistent sound over a stream. Streams like to have consistency, but not a whole lot of compression, you know, in order to do the data reduction that it needs to do. The C4 gives you a great sound, great audio quality, cut to cut, source to source. No matter what level you feed it, it comes out the way you want it to sound. And then finally, the Chameleon C level, you know, at the end of Ariane's and the end of the AFX Compeller, there really isn't any more decent pre-processing for either older processors or even newer ones that you want to have a little more control over. For example, if you're feeding an audio station or radio station over an STL and your transmitter is where the processor lives, a lot of times you want to have some sort of AGC ahead of the STL to level out that audio and sweeten it up to prevent overshoots and things like that. That is where the Chameleon C level comes in. And that is as we like to say, it makes the older processors sound fantastic, makes the newer processors sound better, makes the older processors sound brand new, because it just adds a whole level of depth and audio quality to whatever you're feeding that audio processor, and it makes it sound even better. Now, coming up at NAB, I believe there's going to be some new things introduced that we're very excited about. All I can tell you is that the name of one of them is the Chameleon Smooth. That's all I can tell you. So, angry audio. Don't get frustrated. Get angry when problems come up. They disappear when you get angry. AngryAudio.com.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks to Angry Audio for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. I also want to mention to you Max Connect Wireless. We're not going to hear from Gary or John today about these. We're going to hear from Kirk Harnack. Here's a couple different 4G LTE modems. And my point here in showing you both of these, one is from Pepwave, the other is from Cradlepoint. It doesn't really matter which one you use, or even some other ones that are offered, either you can provide or offered through Max Connect Wireless. The point is the SIM card that goes in there. The SIM card is what connects you to the Max Connect Wireless network, and it's available from any of the major carriers, from T-Mobile, from AT&T, or from Verizon. And it's also available in Canada. How about that? And you get prioritized data, not like all the other 60,000 schmucks in the stadium who are updating their Facebook or their Insta while the game is going on. You get a channel, you get channels and guaranteed data that they don't get. And so that means that you, the broadcaster, you can have your audio or even video webcast going on. You can send data, you can send your audio back to the studio, no problem. I have used this very one right here, this little Pepwave job, from places that I thought would work. I had a great 5G signal, but not great data. I've been in situations at a hotel, at a couple hotels, where the Wi-Fi was strong, but the data would literally come and go. And this guy absolutely solved the problem. We've done the show several times with Max Connect Wireless. We've even done an SBE national meeting with video where we thought that a phone hotspot would work great, and it didn't, even though we had full bars, lots of signal, and even testing good, because we had a lot of dropped packets. Well, I can't say you get no dropped packets, and that's not guaranteed, but far as I can tell, it always works. It works well. Max Connect Wireless, I want to thank Josh Bone for coming up with this idea for broadcasters and making it available. You want to try this out yourself? Contact Max Connect Wireless. Go to maxconnect.com and look it over. Talk to them about, you know, what plan might be best for you. It's good for transmitter sites where you can't get good internet. It's also good for remote broadcasts or keeping you on the air, as I did at WEVL in Memphis, Tennessee, when their Verizon modem, or their, I'm sorry, Comcast, their Comcast modem was taken out by lightning. Check it out. Max Connect Wireless. Appreciate you guys and sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris, I don't know what if you had a tip of the week, but I will finish my question here. The three scenarios, everything at the studio, a little bit of a split studio to transmitter, or everything at the transmitter site, non-traditional, but can be done these days. What's your gut feeling?
Well, first of all, I hate to tell you, but you're going to have to tell Larry he's going to need a Justin 808 either way. That's part and parcel with HD.
Okay. Okay.
I will say that number three is where everything's going. There, yeah. I have a site or two where I do that. In fact, my site in Chippewa Falls up in Eau Claire is that way. Everything's running out of the transmitter site now. I'm more of a split guy myself. Mm-hmm. I like to just be able to, because we're talking about where I have multiple stations. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to build that in each transmitter site as opposed to one kind of a central data center where that half lives. And then I distribute it from there. So for a single station, I would go with C any day of the week.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I like it too. And thanks for the advice on the Justin. Even if the importer exporter is right there at the transmitter site, you still need to be able to adjust that, huh? Or to have it adjusted. Are you muted? Not getting you now.
Sorry. There you go. They do drift. And one of the biggest complaints we get is the minute that gets a little bit out of alignment, it's just a horrible experience on your main channel. So that's just a standard operating procedure now. I buy them for all of them.
Okay. Good to know. All right. I'll tell them. Hey, actually it's time to go. So I'm sorry if you had a tip of the week saved up. Can you hold it till next time?
I sure can.
Okay. You can hold it for a week. That's awesome.
I can hold it for a week. Yep.
Wow. You're a better man than I. All right. Chris Tarr, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing your knowledge of FM transmitter sites. I really appreciate you.
No, you're welcome. Happy to do it.
All right. Thanks to Suncast for producing today's show and taking care of all those pictures. It's been great. Thank you, Suncast. Thanks to Andrew Zarian, who founded the GFQ Network, where you'll find this and another interesting podcast or two. So check that out. Hey, next week, what do we have next week? I should have looked this up beforehand. Give me one sec, because this will be cool. Let's see. Next week, we're going to be in April already and getting ready to head to NAB. Oh, my goodness. Chris, Paul Jellison is going to be with us. He is an engineer in Southern Ohio, has worked with the big WLW and many other stations for years. Paul's going to be there, and the topic is been there, done that. So we're going to hear from Paul Jellison, and then we're going to be at NAB after that in April. We're going to be broadcasting from the Public Radio Engineering Conference and then from the show floor at the NAB on the 20th. So I know the NAB, we're going to do it live a couple of days earlier. So, all right. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.